It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. When Westby native Cody Green was first diagnosed with schizophrenia nearly a decade ago, he was told he would never work again.
The diagnosis triggered new mental health issues like increased stress, anxiety, and depression. He joined mental health peer support groups and learned how his medical care team could help to relieve some side effects.
But coworkers and managers at job sites, they treated him differently.
Now Green is out with a book on his experiences. It's called Mind Over Meetings, A Personal Perspective on Wellness in the Workplace. Cody Green, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Take us back to the years leading up to your diagnosis. When did you first notice possible signs or that something was not right?
Well, a lot of people don't know, but I actually, before I started advocacy and before I had my own schizophrenia diagnosis, I was actually raised by a mother with schizoaffective disorder. And so I kind of spent a lot of my middle school, high school years being a caregiver for her. When I went off to college is actually when I started having symptoms like hallucinations, delusions, and paranoia. And it was several years after that that I got a diagnosis. So it was quite a process. Unfortunately, because of the delusional disorder, I was unable to recognize the symptoms in myself, even having grown up being a caregiver for my mom. So I ended up struggling with addiction and even incarceration before I was able to get a proper diagnosis and get help.
I also understand that mental health really wasn't discussed openly in your family. Why do you think that was as you were caring for a mother?
I think it was just a little bit of a cultural thing in the Midwest and in rural areas. Even to today, I see a lot of this, where families are not willing to have these conversations. It's largely due to the stigma surrounding mental health and mental illness. And the reason that I'm trying to educate people is so that we're more willing and able to have these conversations with our friends and family members to make sure that they're getting resources and access to care.
When the doctor told you that there was no way you'd be able to work again or hold down a steady job, you said it felt like a death sentence and you felt really alone and confused and scared. What was this time like for you at work?
It was so frustrating because I knew that if I had the right help and assistance that I would be able to work just like anyone else. But that required me having access to the right medication and treatment. It also required employers to be willing to accommodate me and be able to help me as I navigate the workplace. And so I just wanted to try to live a normal life. I wanted to have what everyone else was able to have. And for a long time, that didn't seem possible. So years into me navigating the workplace and being fired from jobs and let go from jobs, I started just keeping track of different ways that I was able to make my day-to-day life easier in the workplace. And that's kind of how I ended up getting to the point of writing this book.
You felt embarrassment and humiliation. You said telling HR that you had schizophrenia. Can you talk about that moment or the moment when you disclosed to your workplace about needing accommodations?
It was really scary, but also, like you said, I talk about being really embarrassing. And the reason for that is I was kind of raised to believe that you don't talk about mental health or mental illness. Whatever you're dealing with, you handle it yourself. And so I had a hard enough time coming to terms with it myself. So that made it much more difficult when I had to start telling people like my employer, telling different friends and family members, and it made it hard for me to come to terms with it myself. So once I was able to really deal with my diagnosis, having to start telling people was not only scary, but it was frustrating and definitely embarrassing.
What are the sorts of jobs that you had with this diagnosis, and what were some of those barriers at work?
Because of my addiction, I did have a criminal record, which already made getting a job really difficult, and maintaining a job was extremely hard for me because I had mental health concerns. And so I basically took any jobs that I could get. I've been really fortunate to actually work in a lot of different industries. I've worked in production, manufacturing, distribution, office jobs, and then even sales. And I went on to even work some management positions in certain jobs. I was really able to navigate the workplace through all of these different experiences. And it's also what allowed me to have a better idea of what different industries look like and trying to find something that fit me and the struggles that I had. Because of my unique disorder and my symptoms, it was hard for me to have jobs that most people had. I wasn't able to do some jobs just for safety concerns. And so moving on to jobs that I found more and more accommodating was kind of the path I had to take just to be able to find a workplace and a position that would work for me.
When should mental health come up as a conversation with your supervisor, with HR? Is it when the interviewing is happening, when the job is established? What is that give and take like? What is that timeline?
I always tell people that mental health and mental illness are a very individual experience. And what I mean by that is everyone experiences their symptoms differently. Their treatment, their medication is all going to be different. And I kind of look at pursuing jobs the same way. I always tell people that the way that I do it is I go through my interview process first, and I wait until I'm offered a job before I disclose any information. That being said, depending on a person's functionality, depending on whether or not they have an official diagnosis, they might choose to do something different. They might choose to be at a job for a while to show that they're able to do it well before they disclose it. But it's all going to come down to a person's comfort level and a person's knowledge about their diagnosis and education about what they're going through. And I think that is what I try to convey in the book, is that every person, because they have their own experience, their own unique experience, is also going to need their own unique way of getting through the workplace. And that's more than just when to bring it up, but also what kind of reasonable accommodations they need to ask for, knowing how they can have these conversations, not just with management, but maybe with close colleagues if they're comfortable, and finding ways to just make their day-to-day life more comfortable while being at work.
What might be some examples of reasonable accommodations that we might not even consider or think about?
For a lot of people, it's going to depend on what their diagnosis is, how it affects them. You know, I've been very fortunate to work with a lot of different mental health advocates, including people with bipolar disorders, generalized anxiety, and then people with other disabilities as well, both physical and developmental. And so reasonable accommodations are something that anyone with a diagnosis can ask for. That's going to directly involve what kind of job they're working, but also how their mental illness affects their work. For me, I had reasonable accommodations kind of ranging from where my workspace was to allowing me to have background noise on to make sure that I didn't have any increased symptoms, whether that was just like a TV show playing on my phone, something like that. But reasonable accommodation also means that, you know, it doesn't disrupt the workplace. It doesn't make the work that you're doing unsafe or anything like that. So it really does come down to the type of role you're in. And that's why I, over the years, kept pursuing different types of jobs until I found something that really fit me.
We're talking with Wisconsin author Cody Green about his experiences living with schizophrenia. His new book explores inclusive work environments. It's called Mind Over Meetings. Cody, someone who is pursuing some accommodations or opening up conversations with HR, there might be concerns that there could be retaliation or that promotion that they really want isn't in the picture, perhaps, or they think that they won't be put up for a promotion based on some of their needs at work or accommodations. How would you approach a situation like that?
Yeah, and I definitely talk about this in the book because this is a very real concern. And although the landscape of mental health conversations has definitely changed a lot, even since, COVID, we're talking more about mental health, we're talking more about mental illness. This is still a reality that some people might be discriminated against or unfairly treated because of disclosing a mental illness. The big thing for people to remember is that we have rights as workers, and knowing what your rights are and how to protect yourself against any sort of discrimination is really important. I also think that if you have the right conversations with HR and leadership, you're able to effectively disclose the illness, find good, reasonable accommodations, and the workplace that you're working for is doing what they're supposed to do, you should be able to not be affected by disclosing what you're going through. But it's going to largely come down to whether or not your employer follows regulations and whether or not you're able to have a good understanding with human resource and your leadership team.
Cody, I want to look at burnout for just a moment. And you have some really interesting insights about self-care and doing things to prevent burnout and to help with that feeling before, to that point of burnout. What is preventative self-care?
Preventative self-care is just anything that you can do to make sure that you don't get to a point where you're unable to continue working effectively or safely. So when I talk about burnout, I think it's important for people to realize that burnout can happen to anyone, and anyone can have mental health issues. That's even people without a mental illness diagnosis. That's even people without a history of mental health issues. Anyone can struggle. And anyone can go through burnout. And the most common cause of burnout is workplace burnout. So it's really important for people to be taking preemptive measures the same way you would with, and I always use this analogy in the Midwest, especially for people in production and manufacturing jobs, but it's the same as equipment. You want to have preventative maintenance so you're not trying to fix broken down equipment. And I think that helps people in those types of roles really stop and think about, well, I wouldn't expect my equipment to run with no preventative care, And so for people, it's anything you can do. For me, it's largely rest, making sure I have a good sleep schedule. It's exercising, it's eating right, and it's going to be different for everyone. A lot of people can tie in spiritual self-care or just being able to spend time with friends or family, being able to really feel whole outside of work is super important for maintaining your self-care while you're at work.
You also make to-do lists, I understand, every day. What goes into that?
Yeah, I tell people this a lot because when I was first diagnosed with schizophrenia, I had so much difficulty functioning day to day that I had to find ways of making it easier on myself and making it feel like I could do what everyone else did day to day. So I started making to-do lists. And when I first began, it was very simple things, as simple as getting out of bed or brushing my teeth or taking my medication. And when I would tell people that I would write those things down, people who didn't struggle with mental health issues would kind of laugh at it. They'd be like, you have to write down to remember to wake up. But for me, it was more about being able to get through one thing, because there was a point in my life where I couldn't even do those things. And so I started making to-do lists, and eventually I started being able to add more and more to these to-do lists. It was making me feel more accomplished, and plenty of studies have proven the effectiveness of having a to-do list, having goals and goal setting. So that can be an effective tool for everyone. And it's something that I, as you mentioned, I talk about a lot and I'm very passionate about because it helped me in my own journey. And I've seen it help a lot of not just patients with severe mental illness, but people who are struggling with situational mental health could be something that comes up in their own life. And it's something that they can do to kind of push through and have goals and a purpose, even if it's just for a short time.
In one of your recent jobs, you had a supportive company where you were able to use the company's employee assistance program and also the Family and Medical Leave Act. And I'm wondering, what do these types of programs, what impact do they have?
This comes back to making sure that a person understands their rights as a worker, but also knows what kind of resources are out there. So there are a lot of resources that employers have. There's also a lot of resources in local areas, depending on where you live. And most employers now have EAPs, which are employee assistant programs. And I had never known about them when I worked my first few jobs. And as time went on and I learned about what an EAP was, I found that I could call someone to be able to talk to someone about what I was going through. And sometimes they would even be able to offer additional resources like some therapy meetings or counseling, just something to help better understand what additional resources I needed. And I was also fortunate enough to be able to use FMLA at my last couple of jobs, which basically just made it so that if I needed to take time off, I wouldn't be fired for doing so. And it would allow me to have more time to be able to deal with my illness. And it actually led to me taking less time off than when I didn't have it, because I wasn't stressed about being let go if I had symptoms one day and had to leave, or if I needed to go through a medication change, or if something came up that I just wasn't able to deal with. It essentially just made sure my job was still there when I got back.
You have your pulse on this issue. I'm wondering, what direction is America, is Wisconsin headed for mental health support at work?
Yeah, I was able to interview Gabe Howard for this book, and he made an amazing analogy. And I, you know, as someone who travels the country and talks to patients and workers and human resource professionals all over the country, what he said really resonated with me, because he said, we are past the starting line, but we are nowhere near the finish line. And I think that holds true. You know, if you look at where we were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, not just in terms of mental health in the workplace, but mental health conversations, disclosing mental illness, anything like that, we've definitely come a long way. I don't think that means we are at a place that we can really celebrate yet. There's a lot of work to be done. And so when I was writing my book, I really wanted it to be not just a guide for patients and people struggling with mental illness. I wanted it to be able to be used by human resource professionals, business leaders, and people that are helping individuals in the workplace, because we need them to understand the need for people in the workplace to be able to disclose illnesses, have access to resources and all these different things, and able to make it more inclusive and be able to have more people working and being able to live full and functional lives.
Cody, thank you for joining us. Thank you for your insights.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Cody Green is a mental health advocate from Westby in Western Wisconsin. Nearly 10 years after receiving a diagnosis for schizophrenia, he explores inclusive work environments in his new book. It's called Mind Over Meetings.